Shh, me, 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 me.
Hey, this is Shara. We're here in Chinatown, Los Angeles, America, and this is Homemade News on Kaechung, 1630 AM. We have a great show for you today. Our stories today come from near and far, from Prince William's campaign to end the ivory trade to the plastic bag ban that's dividing Angelenos as we know it. And Jen and I try to break down the mess that's happening in Ukraine. So let's get right to it.
If you walk into a grocery store in Los Angeles, you will not be hearing your usual question at the checkout line. Paper or plastic?
Are you going to need some bags today?
Yeah, I will.
You want to do a single bag or double bag?
Probably a double bag.
That's because as of January 1st, the city of Los Angeles banned all plastic bags from grocers. They are the largest city in the United States to do so. LA is part of an effort to curb waste by encouraging shoppers to either bring their own bags to the grocery store or buy paper bags for 10 cents. Sue Vang is a political analyst with Californians Against Waste. The organization is an environmental group that focuses on the economics of reducing waste, and they were behind LA's citywide bill that passed last June.
They're plastic bags, they're made of plastic film, they're lightweight and easily airborne, and they don't degrade. Even if you put it into a trash bin, or even if you're trying to recycle and you put it into a recycle bin, when it goes on a truck, if it's not properly closed off, it can just fly off the truck, and wherever that truck is, whether it's, you know, driving next to the Pacific Ocean or, you know, driving next to a highway.
Okay, we get it. We need our trees, and some of these bags will take hundreds of years to deteriorate. But Silver Lake resident Paula Little tells us what's really at stake.
I recycle the plastic bags when I get them. We have a lot of animals, so I reuse them all the time. That makes it a little bit more difficult.
How will Paula clean up her dog's poo?
You see, everything comes down to poo. From the top of your head to the sole of your shoe. We can figure out what's wrong with you by looking at your poo.
Now that plastic bags aren't offered at the grocery store anymore, Paula needs to be more resourceful with her dog cleaning ways, or else she'll be in deep doo-doo. Does she use paper bags, train her dog to go in the litter box, or a cereal box? Seriously, Heal the Bay, another environmental group that's been promoting the plastic bag ban, suggests that pet owners use wrappers from loaves of bread or cereal box liners. Best way to start the morning. But Little isn't the only one who relies on plastic bags to clean up after her pets.
Many people reuse these bags for secondary or tertiary possibilities. Remember, every time that you are following after your dog and picking up that dog waste, you're also alleviating the need to buy a heavier plastic bag from a consumer packaging company like Glad or Hefty or something like that.
That's Mark Daniels, the senior vice president of plastics company Hilux Poly. Hilux Poly spent millions of dollars lobbying against the plastic bag ban over the last several years. Daniel says they are reusing the bags, so what's the fuss? Fang says bullshit.
It is a common argument, and you know, people do use these bags at least once more for dog waste, but two-time use really isn't reusable compared to that state level is 125 times usage. So my argument there is that, they really can't say it's reusable just by saying I'm going to use it twice.
The battle over LA may be over, but Californians Against Waste and Hilux Poly are already continuing to fight at the state level. If approved, the law could ban plastic bags across California by July of 2015. For now, residents of LA are acclimating to their plastic-free lives and just hoping that shit don't hit the fan while they're at it. For Homemade News, I'm Sharon Morris.
Hemorrhoid, or is it rectal cancer? When you flush your dookie down, you flush away the answer.
It doesn't really matter.
if it's hard or if it's loose. We'll figure out what's ailing you as long as it's a deuce.
Yes!
Everything comes down to poo.
Everything comes down to
cardiovascular and lymphatic, yes, the nervous system too. All across the nation, we trust in defecation. Everything comes down to poo.
If you want to know what's wrong, don't sit and act so cool. Just be a man and eat some bread and drop the kids off at the pool.
My stomach hurts.
Check the poo.
Sprained my ankle.
Check the poo.
I was shot.
Check the poo.
Homeless guy threw poo in my eye.
Check the poo.
Mine are his.
First him, then you.
It may sound gross. You may say shush. But we need to see what comes out of your tush. Because
everything comes down to poo. Whether it's a tumor or a touch of the flu. Please won't you pinch us off a big fat clue.
Our number one test is your number two.
If there's no breeze, light on that twist. Everything comes down.
Welcome back to K-Chung on 1630 AM. This is Homemade News. I'm your host, Shara Morris, and you just heard our lovely story on the plastic bag ban from a more visceral level. So, and you just heard that song, Everything Comes Down to Poo, was from the Scrubs musical, which was one of my favorites. So anyway, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll be back shortly. Here is Time Spent in Los Angeles by Dawes.
the places I have been and the dirt that I've been gathering deep beneath my nails. But now I know what I've been missing, and I'm going home to make it mine. Special kind of sadness, you got that tragic set of charms that only comes from time spent in Los Angeles. Makes me wanna wrap you in my arms. You got that special kind of sadness, you got that tragic set of charms that only comes from time spent in Los Angeles. Makes me wanna wrap you in my arms.
Welcome back to Homemade News. I'm your host, Shara Morris, and we have a really great show for you today. So we're going to go back to a segment that we haven't been to for a while. This is Breaking News from the Past.
Last week, the National Archives released 3,500 documents from the Clinton administration to the general public. The papers discussed Clinton's 1993 failed health care bill, the arrest of the Unabomber, and government gridlock. But the real question is, who should we have really called POTUS in the 90s? Here's the story. It's easy to remember the Clinton era in rose-tinted glasses. Life seemed simpler. Probably because I was simpler. I was 10, and I was wearing rose-tinted glasses. It was the 90s, after all. But we're now getting the truth of it all. This week, the Clinton administration released thousands of documents surrounding their administration. Already, some interesting facts have surfaced. Apparently, Clinton would leave his morning senior staff meeting every 20 minutes in order to feed his Tamagotchis. And Janet Reno apparently called Al Gore Scary Spice during a top-secret meeting regarding Kosovo. The most surprising note of all, Hillary Clinton was reportedly running the White House the whole time. You heard me. Hillary Clinton was actually the acting president. I mean, we talk about Hillary being such a presence during Bill's administration because she was running it. The documents reveal that Bill and Hillary knew that the country was far from accepting the idea of a lady president. So they decided that Bill would campaign, and once he won, Clinton sat in the Oval Office while Bill did whatever Bill liked to do. In a handwritten letter to her husband dated August 24, 1991, Hillary wrote, quote, "Don't worry, Bill. Once we beat Bush in the elections, it'll be smooth sailing. I'll take it from here." That is why Hillary was so active in the healthcare initiative. Even though the bill ultimately died, these pages document Clinton's struggles to overhaul healthcare, working tirelessly with Democrats and Republicans to do so. So really, the glass ceiling's been shattered 20 years ago. History's been made. Sexism is so dead. But all is not rosy glasses. These documents raise new questions on whether Hillary is eligible to run in 2016. Has she missed her moment to officially be president? Will we be looking at a Biden Democratic campaign after all? The Supreme Court will be speaking on this shortly. For Homemade News, I'm Sharon Morris.
We just brought in some 90s nostalgia to go with our Clinton story. So that was the Spice Girls. We're back with Homemade News on 1630 AM. I'm your host, Shara Morris. Speaking of our childhoods, we have a special guest here to discuss the ivory trade story with us. Jen has the story.
In England, everybody loves the royal family. Everybody loves their weddings and their babies and their carefree romps through Africa with thousands of photographers following them. The only thing they can't really do is change anything or influence government. But Prince William is taking a pretty courageous stand anyway against the 1,200 pieces of controversial ivory in the Queen's royal collection. This story is about ivory.
I'm so honored to be hanging out today doing a roundtable discussion with two important royal leaders. Welcome, Prince William, Duke of Cambridge.
Yes, very well.
And welcome to you, King Babar of the Elephants.
Oh, good morning.
Thanks to both of you for coming on the show. Prince William is in the news lately because he's calling for his family to burn all of the ivory in their royal collection. It's a controversial move, and people are equally passionate on both sides. William's hope is to condemn poachers and work towards stopping the ivory trade. On the other side are the people who appreciate the historic pieces and insist that the Queen doesn't even own them. She actually just holds them in trust on behalf of the nation, so they believe that the fate of all the ivory pianos, bookcases, tables, chairs, carvings, paintings, it's not up to her. Plus, art experts have criticized William's plan as being bonkers. So William, what do you say to people who say that your plan is misguided?
We have to be the generation that stopped the illegal wildlife trade and secured the future of these magnificent animals and their habitats.
And King Babar, any thoughts?
There must be a reason, and I'm going to find out what it is.
25 years ago, Kenya was the first country to burn its ivory stockpiles. The powerful decision inspired the international ban on ivory trade the following year. So it's obvious that William's plan could inspire important progress. In fact, it's already helping because we're talking about it today. King Babar, do you think that Kenya's example has had a big impact for elephants?
That's an understatement.
Despite the terrible crisis that we now face, we both continue to be optimistic that the tide can be reversed. We've been so impressed by the brilliant work already being done on the ground to improve enforcement and in consumer countries to stop the demand for wildlife products. We're also extremely encouraged that this issue is now starting to receive the attention it deserves at the highest levels of government. It is heartening that many African leaders are proactively developing plans of action and seeking solutions.
I know it sounds impossible, but there's a good reason we all try to make the effort.
Poaching is actually a much larger crisis than you might think. Ivory is a huge conflict resource in Africa, which means that it's one of the few things that can be quickly turned into cash to fuel warfare and fund terrorists across the continent. Money from trafficking ivory goes straight to terrorist groups, like the one responsible for the chilling Nairobi shopping mall attack last year. Ivory trafficking is one of the most lucrative crimes. It brings in about $10 billion annually. What do you think about efforts to get poaching under control?
In the face of such a threat, it is natural to feel powerless, but I have seen the extraordinary impact of advances in protection on the ground and the power of social media in reducing demand for these products.
It threatened to wipe out the kingdom. I had almost given up hope.
For elephants, it feels like they're always at risk, and their population is rapidly dwindling all over the world. At last year's Clinton Global Initiative, Hillary Clinton spoke out about the crisis. She argued that unless the killing stops, African forest elephants are expected to be extinct within 10 years. Actually, scholars around the world have started to ask an incredibly painful question. Are we soon going to live in a world without elephants?
Questions, questions, questions. Everybody wants answers. Where? When? How? What? The king's supposed to have all the answers. I think I've run out of answers.
This year, I have become even more devoted to protecting the resources of the earth for not only my own son, but also the other children of his generation. It is, of course, even more important for each child growing up in countries where these animals live. It is nothing less than immoral that they are losing their birthright to fuel the greed of international criminals.
It really looks like the situation for elephants and humans could hardly get worse than it is. I read that in Tanzania, villagers like to poison pumpkins and roll them into the road for elephants to eat, hoping to kill a single elephant and make more than they possibly could in a whole year. And on the human end, 11 park rangers in Congo have been killed since 2008 while they were defending elephants against poachers. Hopefully this royal alliance, Prince William, working alongside King Babar, can save the elephants before it's too late.
I'm reasonably headstrong about what I believe in and what I go for, and I've got fantastic people around me who give me great support and advice.
Prince William, King Babar, thank you so much for being on the show today. Our hearts go out to you with this painful struggle.
Have a wonderful show, and I'd best get back to the palace.
Wow, I am so impressed with Jen's reporting. That was amazing. It's so sad, but thank you so much for bringing that to light. It's also so impressive. We've had such such amazing and impressive guests, roster list of guests here on Homemade News. I mean, whoever thought that Prince William and King Babar would be here, but they were so wonderful and couldn't be more humble. So we appreciate them working together on this very important issue. So we're gonna take a commercial break, and we'll be back shortly. So tune in. So I don't know if that song rang any bells for any of you, but that was Alison Krauss's version of Baby of Mine from Dumbo in that really sad scene where the mother is locked away and their trunks are hugging, and it's really sweet and sad and it makes you want to cry. So basically, at Homemade News, we just want to make you cry. But that was just to think about the elephants. Anyway, so speaking of happy news, Jen and I had a dialogue about what's going on in Ukraine, and we tried to just kind of break things down to make things a little bit more accessible. So if you're just tuning in, this is Homemade News. I'm your host, Shara, and here's our discussion on Ukraine. Have at it. Shit's going down in Ukraine. Crimea is up for grabs. Russian forces have moved into Crimea, but they're pretending not to be Russian, even though they're conspicuously speaking Russian to one another. It's a confusing situation, and we're one stray bullet from World War III. Jen and I don't have to. So, Jen, give us a sense of the neighborhood. We've got Russia, we've got Ukraine, there's something called Crimea. Give us a tour, if you will.
That's a great question. Ukraine is a septagon, which means it borders all of the countries that only recently got cassette players. Russia, Belarus, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, Romania, and Moldova. It's basically European Bed-Stuy. It's a gentrifying neighborhood. So it's like they have the coffee shops, but they don't have the bike lanes yet.
You didn't mention Crimea.
It's an autonomous peninsula within Ukraine. It's sort of Ukraine, but sort of just itself. If you want to know what it looks like, don't Google image search it, because it's all just maps. Just maps. That's because the main thing about Crimea is that nobody knows exactly where it is.
It's just a peninsula, so why does it matter?
Well, Crimea has always mattered a lot throughout history. It's surrounded by the Black Sea, which is Russia's best shot at a warm water port, and that's important because otherwise all they have are these frozen ports, which are really not ports anymore at all. Unless you're a Santa Claus-based exporter, it's really pointless. Crimea is the best chance for Putin to have a relationship with the West, even though actually he doesn't give a shit about the West.
So it always matters, but why does it matter now?
Right. So Viktor Yanukovych was the president of Ukraine until 2 weeks ago, when he fled the country because he was impeached. Also, there was a warrant out for his arrest for the crime of killing just like a lot of people. Overnight, Viktor had to say goodbye to all of his zoo animals and leave everything behind. He can't live in his giant mansion anymore. He built the place just how he wanted it, with a roof made out of copper and doors that cost $64,000 each, and now he can't even live in it, because he's so corrupt. And now he's hiding in Russia, but Ukraine is trying to extradite him.
But Jen, why now?
Okay, since the fall of the Soviet Union, Ukraine has been a bit of a puppet for Russia. Cue the puppet master. But recently, it wanted to head out on its own and be independent, or say, be a real boy. Especially since that boy had so much debt. The European Union said, okay, you can be part of our club, but you have to do certain things for us. And Yanukovych was like, I don't know. In the meantime, stalwart Russia was there proposing this knockoff thing called the Eurasian Union, and Putin was like, I'll give you $15 billion and you can call me Geppetto. So at first, Yanukovych sided with Russia because it's familiar, and leaving Putin is scary.
I get that what's happening over there matters, but why is Obama so mad?
The story's not over yet. A revolution started happening in Ukraine. Guns fired, people died. The country ousted Yanukovych, and they brought in a substitute government teacher. So that was a signal to Russia that Ukraine was going to go west and hang with Europe. That's when Russia sent unmarked troops down to seize Crimea, which they did.
Well, I still don't understand why Obama's so mad.
Because he's in this really weird situation. Nobody wants to go to war in America, but everybody wants to look tough. And it's difficult to find this middle ground since Putin is out of his fucking mind. Other politicians in the US have been chiming in with solutions, but that's easy for them because they don't have to make the decision. And actually, all of their ideas suck. Lindsey Graham, a senator from South Carolina, suggested South Carolina's favorite law enforcement strategy, the noose. Graham advised the president to create a democratic noose around Putin's Russia. I feel like Obama is not going to do that. but it's hard to say what he will choose to do. And why is John Kerry Secretary of State? I used to like his whole Munsters look, but now I just wish Hillary were in there taking care of this right now.
But if you think about this, why can't Putin stick his fingers in Ukraine? America sticks its fingers into pretty much all the other countries all the time.
Right, that's a great point.
Okay, but... okay, well, what do you think is going to happen next?
Frankly, nobody has any idea. And it's beginning to look like Putin is just stalling for time.
Welcome back to Homemade News. You just heard our story where we broke things down for you about Ukraine. So hopefully now y'all feel a little bit more enlightened on the subject and region. Maybe now you can speak Russian fluently or something like that. So at this point, we're just going to play some music for you. Thank you so much for a great show. You've been some wonderful listeners, our many listeners. And here is our next song.
This is how it works. It feels a little worse than when we drove our hearse right through that screaming crowd while laughing up a storm until we were just bone, until it got so warm that none of us could sleep, and all the styrofoam began to melt away. We tried to find some worms to aid in the decay, but none of them were home. Inside the catacomb, a million ancient bees began to sting our knees while we were on. A good refrain. You'll listen to it twice, 'cause the DJ is asleep on the radio, on the radio, on the radio, uh oh, on the radio, uh oh, on the radio, uh oh, on the radio. Thank you.
So we're taking a literal slash meta approach to the rest of the show, playing songs that have the word radio in it. So here is, that was Regina Spektor on the radio. And this is Heard It on the Radio, which was originally a Hall & Oates song, but this is the Bird and the Bee version. Enjoy. Welcome back to Homemade News. I'm your host, Shara Morris. Jen is out this week. She's at a wedding in Houston, so we look forward to her return and when we're actually hosting together, because it's been a while and we miss one another and are looking forward to our K Chung reunion where we'll be on air together. So you've heard us have discussions together and have our talk on Ukraine, but it's something special when it's live. So with that, I am bringing in some Joni Mitchell, You Turn Me On, I'm a Radio, and you had just heard The Bird and the Bee, Heard It on the Radio, and enjoy.
Dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Honey, who needs the static? It hurts the head, and you wind up cracking, and the day goes dismal from red puss party to the sign of prayer. What a sorry face you get to wear. I'm gonna tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark mother above you,
our show for this week. Our next show is on the 23rd, so we have some excited stuff planned, so please tune in. And yeah, we really enjoyed being here today. So with that, see you next time. Thanks so much. This is Homemade News.